The Supreme Court's new term started today. The court will consider abortion access, transgender rights, and potentially a number of issues involving President Trump in what could be a politically explosive term. Joining us now is Dahlia Lithwick, who writes about the courts and the law for Slate and hosts the podcast Amicus. Hi, Dahlia.
Hey there, Jeremy.
Okay, well, let's get right to some of the big issues that are before the court this term. Tomorrow, justices will hear arguments in three cases related to LGBT rights. What's at issue here?
This is a monster case that will affect millions of Americans. Essentially, there are two consolidated cases where two employees were fired simply for being gay. And the third case involves a transgender woman who was fired from a Michigan funeral home when she said to her boss she wanted to present as a woman. All of the cases implicate whether Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, that prohibits discrimination, quote, because of sex, sweeps in discrimination because of either gender preference or transgender status. Mm-hmm. The courts have been generally inclined to say, yes, this is, of course, because of sex. The employers in this case and the Trump administration say no, that Title VII should not be able to protect those workers.
Okay, another big topic will be abortion. The court agreed on Friday to hear an abortion case out of Louisiana. Tell us more about that one. How big a deal could this be?
It's a very, very big deal. This involves a 2014 Louisiana law that said that in order to provide abortions, a physician had to have admitting privileges 30 miles away from where they were performing the abortions. If that sounds familiar, it's because that is identical to the provision of the Texas law that the U.S. Supreme Court struck down in 2016 in Whole Women's Health. Justice Breyer, writing for the majority of the court, said that has nothing to do with advancing maternal health. What it does do is close down clinics. We do know that Louisiana, if they go forward with this admitting privileges law, the three clinics in the state will go down to one clinic. So this will functionally close a lot of clinics, not just in Louisiana, but presumably around the country. The question I think the court has to deal with is, does the absence of Anthony Kennedy substituted for Brett Kavanaugh justify doing away with a decision in Whole Women's Health that is fundamentally the same?
What about all the laws that have been passed since President Trump took office in a handful of states restricting access to abortion? Are we expecting any of those laws to land in front of the court soon?
All of those five states that have passed those six-week abortion bans that essentially say no abortions under any set of facts have all been blocked in the courts. Just last week, Georgia was the latest court to enjoin that law. Those laws, I think, are further down the pipeline. Mm-hmm. And I would also say that the court is probably less interested in taking on a case that directly nullifies Roe v. Wade, forcing them to write the sentence, Roe v. Wade is overturned. Mm-hmm. They can do it by way of these trap laws, which is why the Louisiana case, I think, is on the docket.
There's also a Second Amendment case this term, the first in more than a decade. Tell us about that one.
This is a New York law that it was a very strict gun law that essentially said nobody in New York could travel with their gun unless they were going to just one of seven blessed shooting ranges. Hmm. The question was whether it was unconstitutional under the Heller decision from 10 years ago. As you said, the court has not waded in on a gun case in 10 years. They have not wanted to touch this. It's interesting because over the summer, New York repealed the law. That means that it should be moot. The court could have kicked it away and not heard it. But today the court said, nope, we're going to go ahead and hear it. We can decide at oral argument whether it's moot. But I think it answers a lot of pressure in the pro-gun rights community. They want to see Heller and its progeny really expanded beyond the limited holding of the court.
Okay, let's talk about President Trump, because he is likely to come up in the court this term. And not just if there's a case that makes it there, but also because if the president is impeached by the House of Representatives and there's a trial in the Senate, Chief Justice John Roberts would preside over that trial. What would that mean for the court?
Well, it doesn't mean much for the court. I think folks think that he would have some adjudicative role, Jeremy. What he would do is a sort of ceremonially preside over it. He doesn't have a lot of power. The framers were very careful that the Supreme Court doesn't have actual powers in the impeachment context. But what it does do is put John Roberts on page A1 of the newspaper every single day, and that is his worst nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of the White House being before the court, the White House is fighting against congressional subpoenas for documents related to the impeachment inquiry. Back in the 70s, the Supreme Court ruled during Watergate that President Nixon had to hand over audio tapes recorded in the Oval Office. Could the court end up in the middle of this impeachment inquiry and impeachment debate?
There's two different strains. One is there's precedent in a case called United States versus Nixon. It involved a judge, not Richard Nixon, that said essentially the court does not want to touch matters on the merits in an impeachment inquiry. They don't want to decide whether an impeachment was legitimate. But you're quite right. There are a lot of ancillary questions having to do with tax returns and emoluments, things that are both subject to court jurisdiction and also that the impeachment inquiry is going to touch on. So, yes, I think those kinds of cases, not the final merits of impeachment itself, but I think the kinds of cases that inflect on issues that the courts are already looking at, those may come before the high court.
Do they ever fast track these things just to get things over with the way that they did, I guess, with Bush v. Gore back in 2000? The Supreme Court took that very quickly.
Yeah, and they've in fact been fast-tracking a whole bunch of cases because the Justice Department has been seeking to have them fast-tracked. Mm-hmm. So it has actually been to Trump's benefit up till now that the court has let cases leapfrog over the lower courts. Whether it's going to be to Trump's benefit to leapfrog these other kinds of issues, that remains to be seen.
Okay, and this is going to be the second term with both of President Trump's appointees to the court. That would be Justice Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh. What did we learn about them last term, and what are you looking forward to as you expect what will happen this term?
Well, we always want to be careful about not speculating from a tiny number of cases, but I think it's fair to say they disagreed more than anyone expected. There's no such thing as a Trump judge. They have very, very different viewpoints and approaches. Kavanaugh last term tended to vote more with John Roberts at the sort of moderate center right of the court, and Neil Gorsuch tended to be further out to the far right wing of the court. But I think it really does remain to be seen. We know that Justice Kavanaugh particularly knew that he was under a microscope last year and was very, very careful to make minimalist, uncontroversial rulings his preference. Whether that sticks this term, we'll have to see.
John Roberts famously joined the liberals in a high-profile decision last term that the Trump administration could not add a citizenship question to the 2020 census. Is he we've talked about him as the court's new swing vote after Kennedy left. Is he moving further to the left, do you think?
It's a great question, and I'm not sure it's a left-right axis. I think it's more an axis of people who want to compromise to keep the courts out of the front pages and the people who want to go for broke at the sort of far right and left wings of the court. It is very clear that last term, John Roberts, Elena Kagan, Stephen Breyer, and often Brett Kavanaugh clumped together at the center to try to keep the big, big ticket cases from erupting. I think John Roberts still has a very decided interest in doing that. Particularly, these decisions are going to come down in June, right before a big presidential election. Mm-hmm. I think that's the way he's going to be the swing justice, is just trying to manage the mayhem and make it look like it's not political.
One more thing I want to ask you about, Dahlia, the questions about the health of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who's been treated a number of times for different forms of cancer. Here she is in an interview with NPR's Nina Totenberg over the summer.
There was a senator, I think it was after the pancreatic cancer, who announced with great glee that I was going to be dead within 6 months. That senator, whose name I've forgotten, is now himself dead. And I am very much alive.
I am very much alive, she says. What do we know about Ginsburg's health at the moment?
Well, we know the court is pretty closed-mouthed about it, and we know that she's 86 and that this summer was treated for a fourth bout of cancer. We also know she's been crisscrossing the country giving speeches at a punishing rate, and mm-hmm. she says she's fine. I guess from my point of view, it really does consolidate that this is the question. There are an awful lot of people who voted for Donald Trump in the belief that he could seat 1, 2, 3 justices, and there are an awful lot of people who I think are waiting to see whether he can flip Ruth Bader Ginsburg's seat in time for the 2020 election.
That's Dahlia Lithwick, who writes about the courts and the law for Slate and hosts the podcast Amicus. Dahlia, thank you.
Great to be here.